This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell.
Welcome to the Krishnadas Pilgrim Heart Hour. In this podcast, Krishnadas shares his warm-hearted and down-to-earth path to the divine. If you are interested in supporting Krishnadas' podcast, please go to beherenownetwork.com/KD.
Anybody else? Where's the mic?
First off, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's, I think I told you last time.
Is that an order or a...
Yes, you will have one. Yes. It will be the most gracious birthday in the history of birthdays. No, you remind me of my brother, he's only 25, so...
Yeah, that's right, see? Hey.
I'll do this question. You mentioned earlier the concept of people sometimes having the view of, I've got to stick a gun out and make sure that nobody else comes and disturbs.
In order to protect their happiness.
And to protect their happiness.
Their peace of mind, yeah.
And unfortunately, it's maybe a growing sentiment, as we've seen. And so I'm curious just to hear your thoughts on what one could say to a person who has that sort of worldview, that sort of perspective, who thinks this sort of universal loving kindness may be naive or... unsafe. Just any thoughts you may have on that? Thank you.
Wait, don't go away.
Sure.
You asked like about 40 different things there.
Did I?
So somebody wants, are you talking, I'm not talking about real guns, but you've seen.
No, people. Well, some people are.
Yeah, no, okay. But compassion and loving kindness are not for other people. It's how we forgive ourselves. That's how we open our own hearts. We're not doing it for someone else, but starting to think about other people and the pain that they're in, the suffering that they're living with, which underlies their own actions. That's it's something that happens from within. It's not something you do to another person. Okay? Nor do you expect that it's going to have an effect on anybody. You're not doing it for any particular reason. You're doing it because you understand how it works on you. And the bottom line is, the very, very, very bottom line is there is only one of us in the whole universe. That's the bottom line truth. We are all cells in the same body. Some of us seem to be a little cancerous. but we are all cells of one body. So until all the different cells become healthy, there's no liberation for everyone, for anyone. Final liberation. That's what they say. So with that in mind, that should have some effect on how you treat people. But that doesn't mean that the people are going to respond to that. That's their own predicament. So that was one part of the question you asked. There was more.
I think you nailed it.
Okay, next. Right.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. What made you want to come to the ashram?
Coercion.
No,
I was coerced into coming here. I was threatened. No. I was invited. So I came. And then Gurudeva asked me to continue coming, so I tried to do that. And I had to meet you.
And how do you like it so far?
Ain't so bad. The birthday cake was good.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Do you like the vanilla or the chocolate?
The chocolate. It was my favorite.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's no future for us. I went with the vanilla. It's a nice place. I like it.
Yeah.
And the drive down, it's a long drive from New York. And once you get over into Virginia and Shenandoah County, it's so beautiful. It's a beautiful drive, especially around sunset, because I never see sunrise. Okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I've watched you.
1 second. Just to answer your question a little bit more, it's a nice opportunity to have a few days with the same group of people also. I mean, this provides a wonderful atmosphere for doing really good work on ourselves. And it kind of doesn't dissipate between the sessions so much, which is a great thing due to the way the ashram functions. Yeah, that's good. Still vanilla is the way it goes.
The few times I've met you briefly, I've shared that your documentary, One Track Heart, about the story of your life has touched me very deeply, particularly with some of the challenges that you faced with some of the darkness and the depression. Just personally, it's very inspiring.
Mm.
Having dealt with similar issues myself, and before spirituality, and then even after spirituality, kind of...
It's the same stuff.
Yeah. I was wondering, there's one part in particular that always touches me very deeply. It's towards the end of the documentary where you say you finally... Something about the ocean... And then you finally figured out mm-hmm. that you could, for the first time in your life, you could get out of your own way.
Yeah.
And
that was grace, Pilgrim Grace, Maharaji's grace, yeah.
I'm wondering if you could just share maybe a little bit more about that.
You could go watch the movie again.
I've watched it a bunch of times. That's the only movie again, but...
Let me see if I can...
Or just you, when it shifted, maybe share more.
It's hard to explain in words, and it's one of those things that somebody could have told me, this is what's going to happen, and I would go, oh yeah, okay, cool. But I wouldn't have had a clue what they were talking about. So it's one of those things that... It's like all of us. We live in our own worlds, and the little bit of communication with other people's worlds is good, but still you never really know what another person's feeling from their side. We can only imagine from our side what, right? So, well, the whole trip to India was in relation to the fact that I quit chanting. I had started chanting with people this way in the summer of 94 at Jiva Mukti in New York. But by the spring of 95, it already had become a real problem for me because I was a hungry guy and all this food was being offered and I was just going to eat it all up, you know, and I was going to use, I saw what was happening, what was going to happen, and that there was no way that I could not misuse all this energy and love and affection and attention and not misuse it and take it and use it all for my own satisfaction and needs. I was hungry and I wanted to eat and food was being offered. So there was no possibility of not eating. And it bothered me very much because, not because I didn't want all those things, that didn't bother me. What bothered me was that that's not why I started chanting. I started chanting to try to reestablish my connection with Maharaji, which I felt from my side I had dropped. Now, he didn't drop his connection with me, but I was suffering from the fact that I felt I had lost my connection with him. And so that's why I started to chant. And now I could see that I wasn't going to be able to continue to do that because it's like putting a four-year-old behind the seat of a jumbo jet. Say, just push for any button you like. You know, you're going to have a crash. That's what it was like. So I just recognized that I couldn't do it anymore because I wasn't capable of doing it from the right place, just to put it simply, right? And so I quit, and I was in terrible despair because you see, it was I knew that chanting with people was the only thing that was going to save me, you know. And I was not doing well. It was 20 years after Maharaji died, and I was nothing was happening. It was very bad. Not getting it together. And he showed me that chanting was the only thing I could do to help myself, and now I was being prevented from doing it by my own stuff. Is that clear?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if it's clear. Is it clear?
Yes.
Yes.
So, and I, being a stubborn little boy, I just said, well, you know, if I can't do it right, I'm not going to fucking do it. And that's all there is to it. So I quit. And I went to India. As it turned out, I arrived in India on the spring solstice. And as it turned out, I left India on the summer solstice. So it was strange. And I would say to Maharaji, you know, I was talking to him and I said, hey, you know, you have to fix this. This is your problem. You know, I'm singing to people in your name. If you don't fix this, I don't sing. That's the deal. Got it? Good night. And every day I'd wake up, nothing changed. It was pretty bad. Every day it was a horror show. And every day I was just waiting for him to do this, right? To change. I had no doubt he could. You know, he could do anything. Would he? Was the question. Right? I don't know why he wouldn't, but I also don't know why he would. Either way, that's a mystery to me. I had no doubt he could change what had to be changed in order for me to continue. I didn't even know what it was. I wouldn't know how to describe and say what had to happen. I didn't know, but something had to happen. So 3 months in India, some of it down in Lucknow, it was 120 degrees, brutal, just horrible. Finally, we got up to the hills, and I went up to Kimchi, and Kimchi is the temple I lived with Maharaji and, for some time. And I was singing with the Kirtanwalas every day, Hare Krishna guys. It was great. I was having a great time. But nothing had changed. And even though I was having a good time, underneath I knew nothing had changed. And so there was a lot of despair, really terrible despair. Because I was going to have to go back soon. What was I going to do? You know, if this didn't happen for me, then I wouldn't be able to sing. It would be really pretty bad. It was like somebody threw your life rope, you know, and you couldn't get to it, but you couldn't take it. You wanted to take it, but you couldn't get to it. So it was very painful. So then my original plan was to go back to New York by the middle of May or towards the end of May. And I went to stay up at Kenchi around the beginning of May, and or something like that. And Siddhima asked me, what are your plans? And I said, well, probably go back towards the end of May. And she just looked at me. She said, no, you have to stay. You have to stay here until June 15th, which is the date of the Bandara, the celebration of the opening of the Hanuman Temple, the first temple opened there in Kenshi. You have to stay until June 15th. You have to see Maharaji's big form. What? Okay. So I made a few phone calls and nobody was looking for me the next day. I said, yeah, I can stay. So, it was the most exquisite torture. I can't imagine. You can't even imagine what happened. I have to tell you one story. It's totally humiliating, but I don't care. I love humiliation. So, I developed a really bad case of hemorrhoids. I'm having diarrhea for 2 months, you know. And it was so bad that I actually just stopped eating. You know, I couldn't eat, and I couldn't sleep, I couldn't move. It was pure agony. Those of you who know, don't raise your hand, it's okay. It's a sizable laugh. So it was just terrible, and everybody in the temple knew. Right? I walked across the courtyard, and some old lady came up and said, "Oh, Krishna Das, just sit on a little cushion with a hole in the middle, and then it won't hurt very much." And I'm thinking, this woman is talking about my fucking asshole. Great. I'd walk 10 feet more and somebody else would offer me a few pills. These are very good. It's like everybody knew your business about the part that you want to keep pretty much to yourself. At least those that you love closely. Anyway, so unbelievable. So then I heard there was this guy who lived down in Haldwani, which is a town about an hour away, hour and a half away, who was a very saintly guy. He was a business guy, but he had been taught these recipes by a saint, and he knew how to make these medicines with these blessings in them. And he had medicines, these tinctures for different things, and one of them were hemorrhoids. So I arranged to get this medicine sent up to the temple for me. Oh, there's something else that's even more horrific here. So, you know, they say that if you soak your butt in warm water, I'm living in the mountains. There's no warm water, you know, and there's no place to soak your butt. That's for sure. However, with some warm, lukewarm bath water and a big bucket. So I brought the bucket into my room, a bucket of water, and I put it over by the window because there's these monkey bars on the window, you know, to keep the monkeys out. So I lowered my butt down into this bucket, holding onto the monkey bars. And I'm in total agony, you know, real agony. I was, and I slipped and fell, and the bucket, the water went everywhere, and I'm lying on the floor like, and it's like, oh, man, this is what you brought me here for? I mean, it was just so horrible. Like, unbelievable. Oh, then there's the guy who came up to me and said, you know, you take a little mustard oil and you just put it on your finger. And... that's India. So anyway, so finally after a couple of days, this medicine arrives, right? And the thing is you take, you start off with 2 drops in a glass, a small glass of water. And every day you add a drop until you get to 12, and then you go back to 2 drops. So I figured, okay, what am I going to do? So then I put 2 drops in the water, and I put it on the shelf, and then you leave it overnight, and in the morning, first thing, you drink it. So I woke up that morning, next morning, and I drank the water, and this golden glow just went through my body. I went like, and I pushed the bottle further back on the shelf to protect it from falling. It just got very valuable. This is good. I wonder what 3 drops is going to do. Three drops did nothing. I never felt a thing again. But after a few days, I actually started to get better. It was extraordinary. Okay. And the other thing was, Maharaji had instructed me to wear red. In fact, he told me to wear this red shirt, this dress. It's called an ulfi. And I had made up, and I always wore them. And sometimes in India, many years had gone by, but when I came to India this time, I put the ulfi in my bag, the red. And I said to myself, I'm taking it with me. But I am not going to wear it unless Siddhimat orders me to herself. Unless she says, Krishna, put on that ulfi. I will not wear it unless she... And I put it in my bag. So every time she introduced, like when I was with her and people would come up, every time, first we were in Rishikesh and then somewhere else, every time there were other people and they said, oh, this is Krishnadas from Maharaji's time. He was the pujari at the Devi temple. He used to wear red. And she stopped there every time, like 10 times in a row. And I was just like, I'm waiting for her. Do you have that with you? Did you bring the ulfi? Would you like to wear it? You know, never a word, just, he used to wear red. And she'd look at me. So it was tucked away in my luggage, right? All right, so also every night, you know, in the old days when I was living there, there were no lights in the valley. There were very few, almost no electricity in the whole valley. The temple had one little light bulb in the courtyard. And I used to go lie on the roof of the Dharamsala, which at that time was flat. Now they built a different roof. And you could just look at all the stars. You could see the shooting stars come down. You could hear the shooting stars. It got like that. It was amazing. So quiet, so dark, and the sky was so alive. So now there's lights everywhere. And but there was one place in the back of the temple where I used to go where I could, if I stood in the right place, I was out of the lights, kind of in the shadows, and I could see the sky. And I would look up at the sky and I would talk to Maharaji. I'd say, I don't know, you know, you're not doing anything. get it together. Good night. Next day, you know, I don't know what's going on here. You're not doing anything. You know, I'm not singing, right? You got it. Okay, good night. So it was going on like that every day. Nothing would happen. Nothing changed. So, see, the Bhandara was on the 15th. So the night of the 14th, I go out there and I say, you know, I don't get it. What's going on? You know, you can do this. You can do this. It's no problem for you. I don't understand. Why aren't you doing this? And I just kind of said, well, what am I? I can't make you. If you don't want to do it, I can't make you do it. All right, I'll go back. I'll sing. How bad could it be? Good night. So the next day was... by the way, I had the best birthday I ever had in that period. Because I remember thinking, oh, wow, it's going to be my birthday in a couple of weeks. And the next time I thought, oh, wow, it was my birthday a couple of weeks ago. So then the day started, the day of the Bhandara. The road was closed. There were no buses, no cars allowed. Some private cars, maybe. And it was filled with people lined up all the way from Balali. Like, you know, 7 or 8 kilometers of people lined up. Tens of thousands of people waiting to get into the temple to have their food. They'd come in this way, and then a temporary bridge was built out of the back of the temple. So they'd come in, they'd be given their food, they'd sit down in lines on the roof of the Dharamsala, be fed, finish eating, they file out this way and then over the bridge and gone, you know. And I think they said they fed over 70,000 people that day. So at one point, Siddhima had come out, Siddhima and Jivantima had come out. They were Maharaji's great old devotees. And they come out and they were sitting by the steps where after you had your meal, after you took prasad, as they say, you would walk down the steps and then over the bridge out of the temple. So they would greet people as they were leaving. So I went, okay. So first thing in the morning, I get up and I, on my way to sing with this one group of kirtanwalas that I used to like to sing with. And I walked out of my room and I'm about halfway there, and I stopped, and I said, Krishnadas, you are such an asshole. Would you put on your goddamn red dress? You want to wear it. Nobody's going to tell you. You want to wear it. That's enough. Just go put it on and shut up. So I turned around. I went back into my room, and I put on my ulfi, my red ulfi. I walked out of the room, and all these people were looking at me, like, who's this white monkey in a red dress? I went down and I sang with my guys, and I came back, took a shower, a bath, and then I went to stand over by Siddhima, where she was sitting. And I was standing there with her, and it was on a raised part where you could look down into the temple and you could see the line of people coming in, right? Oh, and then all the way up the hill on the road. So I was standing there for a long time with her, just watching the people, and I began to notice this really unusual feeling, slightly uncomfortable, peace. I started to feel peaceful. Now, this is a feeling I'm not really very well acquainted with, but it really is this kind of very quiet space, just kind of revealing itself, you could say, just opening up really slowly. And I was looking out at the people, and I had this thought, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna is getting instruction from Krishna. And at one point he says, you know, I don't really understand what you're talking about. So Krishna says, all right, boom. And he touches him and he gives him the vision of the universal form. basically he shows Arjuna the way it is. And what Arjuna saw was a lot of things, but one thing he saw was that all beings were constantly in this cycle of birth and death and entering into Krishna and coming out of Krishna and re-entering around, around, around. And this is where Krishna says to Arjuna, I come as time, the great destroyer. This is Krishna talking. I come as time. It is in time that we are born and we die. Outside of time, there's no birth or death. So Krishna says, I come as time. And in me, all beings have their beginning and their end. And like this, I don't know. So I was looking out at this group of people and I just had this thought. I said, you know, this is kind of like that. And I saw that, like, all these people had a storyline, right? Like the guy over there, he said to his family, tomorrow morning we're going to get up, we're going to take that bus, and we're going to catch that train, and we're going to take the bus to Bawali, and then we're going to walk down to the temple, and we're going to take prasad. That's the storyline that guy lives in. But I saw from where I was standing that was just the storyline. What really happened was that Maharaji dragged him, threw the food in his mouth, and dragged him home. He thought he was doing it, just like we think we're living our lives, right? Most of us get up in the morning and think, how much sugar should I put in that coffee today? We think we're living our lives. But I saw it wasn't like that. Maharaji brought these people here and then threw the food in their mouth and dragged them away. And on top of that, Maharaji was doing nothing. He wasn't doing anything. It was all happening inside of him perfectly. The whole thing. See, and when Arjuna saw Krishna, Krishna wasn't doing, he was being. And all beings were going in and out of him, and the whole universe was revolving, but he was stillness. So this was happening inside of this peace, this space that was very, with complete peace. So it was just a passing kind of little flicker at this point. I stood there for a couple hours or more with Ma, and then I was on my way to sing again with some other guys, and then I passed by the Devi temple, the Durga temple, and I realized that I hadn't actually gone there in all the weeks I've been in Kenshi, and I was about to leave the next day. So I walked over and I sat down in front of it in the temple, but there were too many people in the courtyard running around, so I just walked around the back of the temple, and I sat down with my back up against the temple, you know. And I just sat there. And next thing I know, I was coming back. I'd been gone. I don't know. It could have been 1 second. It could have been an hour. I have no idea how long it was. I've been completely gone. And I opened my eyes. And now, I was... fully immersed in the experience of this vast space and total peace, absolute peace and absolute silence. People were moving, people were talking, coming and going, but nothing was happening. I don't know. That's the only words I have to describe it. And there was this vast presence, this vast space, like the sky. And inside of that, everything was inside of that vast space. Just like the sky, everything's inside. The earth, the clouds, the pollution, the people, the planes, the birds, everything's inside of the space of the sky. This was like that. Except it was bigger, much bigger. Nothing could be outside of this vast presence, right? And the other thing was that there was no Krishna Das anywhere. I wasn't there. The me that I know myself to be just wasn't there. And people would come up to me to say goodbye, you know, because I was leaving the next day. And I would usually just go, oh, thank you, yeah. I was going, yeah. I was out of my own way for the first time in my life. Nobody there, nothing like that. None of the stuff, it was all disappeared. It was a fucking vacation. And really, I walked around, I moved, but there was no movement. People were talking, but there was no sound. And I was completely at ease and at peace. And then I looked up in the sky, and I saw this, like, thickening, little, like, vibrating kind of little thickening in the sky. And I pointed to it, and I laughed out loud. And I said, that's Krishnadasness. And what it was a whirling bundle of thoughts going around. That's Krishnadasness, those thoughts. This is me, I'm this, I'm going here, I'm not this, I'm this. Those thoughts, right? And I said, it was too funny. And I laughed, I said, even when I think I'm Krishnadas and I'm stupid, it doesn't affect this. This is always here, just behind your thoughts. This is always here. Couldn't be anywhere else. We're inside of it all the time. And I saw that even when I was stupid and thought I was me, had no deal, it didn't affect this at all. Not at all. And so I was free to come back and sing. Because even if you think that I'm doing this, I don't. That's your problem. I got nothing to do with it. You know, fine, you can think what you want. I'm not going to beat you up. But I don't have to think that. That's what freed me to come back and really be able to sing, because it isn't about me. It was perfectly clear. So, then Siddhi Ma called me. I went to say goodbye. She called me in and she said, you're going? I said, yeah, Ma, I have to go. She said, don't go. I said, Ma, I have to go. Don't go. I said, Ma, I have to go. And she's looking at me and I'm looking at her. We are laughing. It was too funny. She knew, of course, exactly what I was experiencing. And she was just playing with me, you know. Don't go. I said, oh, I have to go. And she said, wait a minute. Go bring him that thing from over there. So they brought me this thing from over there. I said, thank you, Ma. I said, don't go. I have to go. Oh, go get him that thing over there. Get him the thing. Go sit by Maharaj. Just tuck it there in the back. Okay. Now go. Never. It was so good. And then finally, we just broke out laughing. She grabbed me and pulled me down and hugged me. And it was two emptinesses merging, like clouds kind of floating through each other. Oh, there's nobody home. This is the Ram, the names of God are the names of that place. And by Ram Nam Karne Se Sapura Ho Jata, from repeating these names, this is what happens. You find out who you really are. And it wasn't, when I say there was no me, it just meant there were no walls to the house. When it was wide open. It was all me, you could say, but not me. It was all here. There was nothing blocking anything. There's totally nothing to be afraid of. So that's the deal. She teases me. She said, I made you stay. So, well, that's that. I had nothing to do with it, by the way. I mean, I hope you understand that. All I wanted to do was be able to sing. And I begged him to change something and make it happen, and he did. He fucking tortured me for 3 months, but he finally did it. So, this is all happening by his grace, by his blessings. I just try to, you know, do the best I can, stay out of the way, and let it all happen. But the thing that freed me to come back was the recognition that even when I was stupid and thought I was me, I'm not. That's the thing. You're not either. You're being stupid right now. But it doesn't matter. You're still who you really are, even if you don't know. And like, I don't know now. I'm at that space now. That state of mind, it really lasted a long time. It had a long, slow fade, you know? About 9 months. One day I woke up and it was a memory. I could tell the difference. For 9 months it was accessible. I could taste it. But after one particular day, I went, oh, I remember what that tastes like. It was a real difference. Some funny things go on here. So you have to be you. I mean, what's this? What's the whole thing about, right? You have to be who you are. You can't be anybody else. You might as well enjoy it. And if you can't, figure out why. That's the whole deal.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.